Good morning. Good morning, Rabotai. Welcome to Breakfast in the Class. Breakfast in the Class is dedicated in loving memory of Daniela Mufsin Aleha Shalom Leilun Nishmat Daniela Nehama Bat Haya Shira, sponsored by the Ohev Shalom family. As well, dedicated Leilun Nishmat in loving memory of Gabby Safra Aleha Shalom Leilun Nishmat, Gabby Bat Esther Yaakob Aleha Shalom for her Shiloshim, sponsored by Joel and Avi Oster. Also dedicated in loving memory of Ms. Lily Safra Leilun Nishmat Leah Bat Chana. Philanthropy has reached so many throughout the entire world, and dedicated by Mark J. Sitt in honor of his grandmother, Gloria Sitt, who just turned 91. Ad me'av esrim shana. She be blessed with a long, happy, healthy life with plenty of nahat. Mark Sitt, you keep coming to shul in the morning, you're going to give her that incredible nahat as long as she lives. Ad me'av esrim. Also dedicated to Nishmat, loving memory of Earl Falik as Rabbi Sarah, by his daughter and son-in-law, Frida and Norman Shabbat, who loved and respected him greatly. Please make berachot li'lui nishmatam. And in loving memory of Chacham Rafael Aryeh, Leilui Nishmat Chacham Rafael Ben Malka and Rabbi Chia, sponsored by the Ohev Shalom family. In loving memory of Alan Rosenberg, Alav Shalom, Leilui Nishmat Yehuda Ben Lorraine, by his family. And as well, unfortunately this morning, Chaya Farangis Yafa Bat Zinat passed away. May she have a Nechama, may her family have Nechama, may she be Zoche, Tehenish Matat Surah B'Tzura Chaim, sponsored by her granddaughter, I'm sorry, sending our condolences out to Danielle Zaghi. Finally, the Breakfast in the Class is sponsored by David E. Ash in honor of you and the substantial capacity to do good today and every day. And if you'd like to do such substantial capacity to good, you can go onto the website capacityforgood.com, where we are adding more interesting gear every week with the material from the shiurim, from the rabbis, turned into objects that you could wear every day to be able to bring a chizuk to yourselves and to your family. I don't know how much chizuk you're going to get from a t-shirt that says, I survived the toaster fire of 2021, but still very important that we remember that auspicious day. Probably the funniest day of Breakfast in the Class ever. Okay, let's go. My friends, I want to direct your attention to a moment in the parasha, a moment that I think is an inflection point in the story of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. And it serves as an incredible lesson for all of us as well, to notice and to pay attention to moments like this that happened in our lives. Let's back up for 1 second and ease forward in the story of our parasha, Parashat Bo. The pasuk tells us that when Moshe came to warn them about the locust, so as he walks into the place, the servants turn to Paro, the slaves of Paro turn to Paro, Dichit, this guy again? He's coming again. The guy is a 100% success rate at killing us, okay? They turn to Moshe, and they say to Moshe, excuse me, they say to Paro, please, dachilak. Vayomru avde Paro elav. Ad matay yezan al mokesh. Until when is this guy going to be a stumbling block for us? Shlachta nashim, send these people already. Vayavdu. Et Hashem Elohim, let them serve Hashem their God. Haterem Tehdaki Avedam Mitzrayim, don't you know that Egypt is lost? Don't you know that this place is done? We're, you know, past our expiration date? My friends, I pointed out on Shabbat, in the Shabbat afternoon class, that you have to understand how important that moment was. You know, in the times of old, if you opened your mouth to the king without being asked, even if you said good morning, but you said good morning to him before he asked you to say good morning, they'd chop off your head. There's no second chances, HR, issue him a warning, you know, disciplinary hearing. Chop off his head. Never mind if you say, you tell Paro what to do. Never mind if you're not the second in command telling Paro what to do, you're the janitor. Never mind if you're a slave. The slaves of Paro turned to him and they said, until when is this guy going to be a Mokesh? Don't you know Egypt is lost? Let him do what he wants. Death penalty. My friends, this moment is a moment where you're seeing that, of course, the servants of Paro are very frightened of Paro. They're just more frightened of Moshe and God. Because while Paro has the power to chop off the head, this guy Moshe and his God that he reps with his big old stick, this guy does whatever he wants with nature. It's this sorcery that I've never seen before. Can do anything. So they're very, very, very afraid. They're so afraid they speak that way to Paro. In the end, Paro says, you know something, you guys are right. Let's have a conversation. He has a conversation. Who wants to go? Moshe tells him, what do you mean? We're all going. He says, no, no, no. To serve God, all you need is the men. Right? What are you? Is that Nashim you have now? You have a teen minyan? Chalas. The kids, the ladies, they're staying here. What are my father's ladies' class? From, No. They're all staying here. Right? In that conversation, Moshe says, okay, that's how you want it. We'll see you later. The Makav Arbeh comes. What's interesting, my friends, is you have Arbeh and then you have Choshech. Choshech happens without a conversation with Paro. Because in each case, the third Makah happens with no warning. So Dam Tzefardea, warning to Paro. Dam Tzefardea, Kinim happens with no warning. Hashem says to Moshe, you know, go out and do this thing. Arov Dever, Shechin. Arov Dever with the warning, Shechin, no warning. Barad, Arbe, Choshech, Choshech happens with no warning. My friends, after all that's happened, after the people are afraid, after Paro's already negotiating, who's going to go, how they're going to go, after the story of Choshech, after, not before, Paro comes to Moshe and he says, look, this is crazy, okay? You guys want to go? Fadal, go. But I'm going to ask you to keep one thing behind. What am I going to ask you? Let me show you the pasuk. The pasuk says, Ve'ikra Paro el Moshe ve'yomer, Lechu ivdu et Hashem, rak tzonechem, ubkarchem yutzag. Gam tapechem yelechimchem. You want the kids? Take the kids. You want the ladies? Take the ladies. But leave the animals. Moshe says, you're sketching. We have to go bring korbanot. Not only are we going to bring our animals, gam ata titen biyadenu zivachim ve'olot v'asin l'Hashem Eloheinu. You're going to give us animals. Our sheep will go with us. We're not going to leave behind a single thing. We're going to take from that to serve Hashem our God. Now listen to these words. We do not know. We don't know what we're going to need to serve God until we get there. Paro hears this. He goes crazy. You're going to leave? You're going to take everything? You're telling me that we're going to give you stuff also? Get out. And if you dare to see me again, you're going to pay for it with your life. He chases Paro with Moshe out for the first time and tells him if he comes to see him again, the day you see me, you come have an audience with me again, is the day you die. Moshe says, you're absolutely right. I'm not going to come for any more audiences. And he gives him the prophecy on the spot about Makat Bechorot, about how at 12 o'clock, every Bechor, from every person and every Egyptian in the land, every firstborn animal is going to die at exactly midnight. Vayifin, Vayelech min Paro, he says, you're going to come beg me to leave. I'm not having any more audiences with you. That's the story, and that's how it goes. My friends, I was struck by something. Here we have, at the end of Arbeh, a realization that is very strong. It's so strong, the realization, that what's happening here is going down, that the slaves of Paro come to Paro and they tell it to him to his face. Are you with me? That clearly made an impact on Paro. I want you to imagine for a minute, you're at your place of work. Now there's a guy in your workplace, the guy is always positive. He's always saying, nah, it's gonna be fine, you're overreacting. We don't need to do this, we don't need to do that, it's going to be okay. We'll just bring in a couple more workers, we'll just make an investment. The guy is always calm, nothing bothers him. You come into a meeting, and this guy, wild eyes, fire sale, you have to sell the company, there's no chance. That guy, you take him seriously, right? You know why? The guy who always thinks there's a problem, when he tells you it's a problem, what do you say? Hazaku Baruch, it's Tuesday. This guy always says that. He's always, but the person that never opens their mouth, when they speak, you listen. In fact, someone who passed away only this week was described that way to me by someone from the Kehillah. They said he was not a man of many words, but when he spoke, everybody listened. Everybody had respect for him. Perhaps because he didn't speak so often. The servants of Paro never speak. They're too scared to. And finally they come and they challenge his authority in his own royal throne room. And Paro is so taken aback, he doesn't say off with their heads. What does he say? Okay, fine. Let's sit at the negotiating table. Let's make a deal. Paro is wavering. We see it here. We see it after the Makkah of Choshech. But he doesn't pull the trigger. And I thought to myself, what an interesting idea. You know, in the story of Choshech, it's only a couple of pesukim. But the pasuk tells us that God said to Moshe, tomorrow, you know, you're going to hold up your hand and there's going to be darkness. Vayamesh Choshech. And there was a darkness in Egypt for 3 days where a person couldn't see another person. Lo ra'u ish et achiv. V'lo kamu ish mitachtav. And 3 more days where they could not even move out of their seat. The darkness had a thickness to it that the people could not move. My friends, I thought to myself that on the one level, there must be a reason why God is giving the Egyptians darkness as a punishment. But the uniqueness of the punishments of God is that they don't exist in isolation. They're not so that God can feel good about himself because he's beating up on you. The reason why God ever gives a punishment, Jew or Gentile, is only in order to guide, to teach us. What was God teaching the Egyptians? What was he hoping for in giving them the Makkah of Choshech? I wanted to share this idea, which I think is a powerful yesod. You know what God was doing? He was giving every Egyptian the opportunity to think things over for themselves. For 3 days, lo ra'u ru'u esh ish et achiv. Nobody saw anybody else. Nobody had a chance to convince anybody else. They couldn't see one another. 3 more days, they couldn't even move. You know, lots of people tell you they do their best thinking in the tesh, in the bathroom. They can't move, they're stuck there. You know, they go through their life's problems. Azaku baruch. Okay? But imagine being stuck, not for however long it takes to go to the bathroom. Imagine being stuck in the tesh for 3 days. Imagine being stuck in one spot, you can't move. The darkness is so thick, 3 days. You can't move. The only thing you could do is think. They couldn't speak. 3 days of thinking. What a detox they went through during the 6 days of Choshech. First, in isolating them one from another so that everyone got to think for themselves with no external opinions or influences. And second, where you're stuck in your spot, you have a chance to be able, it's the ultimate time out. Stand in the corner. Okay, when can I come out? Not today, not tomorrow, maybe on Wednesday. 3 days, they're in the corner. They have time to be able to think it over. By the way, and Paro is included in the same Makkah. Paro comes out, he says, all the people can go. But leave me the animals. Moshe says, from the beginning, we've been talking about going and having a service of God with sacrifices, with korbanot in the desert. We can't not take the animals. Not only you take your animals. I mean, a rational person, what would they do at that moment? You know what? Reconsider. I just don't want to get beat up anymore. Go, take your animals. What's going on here? Now, there's no question that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened Paro's heart. The Pasuk says it explicitly. But what I do want to share is that there are times in a person's life, an inflection point, a time when a decision is getting made, either by you or by others, where a lot, very important things stand right directly in front of you, and we don't pay attention to how important the stakes of our decision are. I want you to think for 1 second, if Moshe and Paro could have come to an agreement in this moment. Imagine, before Makat Bechorah, before every Egyptian firstborn died, and as we said in yesterday's class, not only the firstborn, okay, but also the firstborn, the nextborn in the house. Animals, humans, well, it's devastation everywhere in Egypt. En bayit asher en shamet. Could you imagine? I was doing the numbers on this. Yeah. You know, it's 300 million people in America. Yeah? How many households do you imagine that is comprised of? It's not an easy number to guess, right? Because you have single households, you have couples, you have families. But let's just imagine a number. The average American family today has something like 2 kids, okay? Roughly around the 2 children mark. That means that a regular family is made up of 4. Sorry? 75 million. Now let's take off some for math, because there's some singles. I'll give you another 25 million. Could you imagine tomorrow morning we woke up and 50 million Americans were dead? And how long did it take for them to die? Not even 1 minute. In one moment, boom, 50 million Americans died. Could you imagine? 1 out of every 6 Americans was dead. Could you imagine what it would be like in the streets? That's what Makat Bechorot was. Now add to that the same number of animals. What a plague this was. And all it took for Paro and Moshe at the bargaining table, yeah? Were they arguing about it then? The women, the children agreed. Then he said, but leave your animals. Moshe said, there are animals. We're going to take the animals. All it took was for Paro to say, okay. Could have avoided the whole Makat Bechorot. In fact, could have avoided it earlier. The first Makat. But that, I'm not talking about that. You know why? Because they were very far apart at that point. If you've ever been in a deal where the two sides are arguing every step of the way, and they get to the last point in the deal, the closing, sitting at the table, and the guy says, okay, so I get this, that, and you're like, no, I get that. And it could be something so dumb, so silly, so irrelevant. Paro just traded for the Jewish people's animals 50 million Egyptian lives. Now again, I'm using American numbers. I'm sure the numbers were slightly different. But the percentage, think about that. Sometimes, for very little, at inflection point moments in our life, for very little, we lose a very lot. For not letting shalom reign, for some silly detail, we lose a lot. For not having the opportunity, for not closing a deal for a Beit Knesset, for a synagogue. You have someone sitting in a Beit Knesset, they want to do something, do some major changes, some beautiful changes. They get caught up fighting about 1 inch on the mechitza. I mean, I'm not saying it's not important. I'm saying recognize what you're losing if you don't make this deal. It's remarkable. The problem, my friends, is oftentimes we don't realize how much is at stake and how little we're losing. And we allow our anger or our ego to sit at the table instead of us. And in order to feel like I won the deal, I have to have it go this way. I used to hear this all the time. Rabbi, you know, this guy, he just needs the win. And I was thinking, how silly. You're a kid in 4th grade, you need to win the race. You're an adult. You're married. You have children. You've been in the business world. Just for the feeling of the win, you'll throw away the whole thing? Paro, in this moment, doesn't care about the animals. You know how I know he doesn't care about the animals? When Moshe tells him that the animals will all drop dead in Dever, what does Paro do? Nothing. When he tells him that the Barad is going to fall down and kill all the animals that are left in the field, what does Paro do with his animals? Nothing. He doesn't care about the animals. Least of all does he care about the Jewish people's animals. What's Paro doing here? I need a win. You took me down. You took out my legs. You nailed my country. You nailed my power. You took everything. Can I just win one thing? And Moshe says, I'm really sorry. What you're not realizing is that the thing that you want to win is the whole point of us going out. is to bring these korbanot in the desert to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A lot of times you think it's such a small thing, and there's so much at stake, but it's so small. And the answer is, it's not that small to the other person. It's the whole point to the other person. I want to give you an example of this, and we'll close it with this. I remember back in London, there was a case that we were dealing with. A couple of rabbis were trying to help a couple get through something. And what was the problem? The problem was that the husband was a very controlling person. So it came out that the wife said, look, I don't mind that he's a control freak in general. I don't mind that he likes to know when and where and how. I don't mind that he needs to be updated. But you know, if I ever want to go out with my family for dinner, for lunch, he has to tell me what day I could go out, what time, when I have to be back. That's not needing to know and needing to have, you know, closure on exactly. That's not an organizational thing. That's a power thing. This is a sick man. Anyway, he sat the guy down with his wife. And I said, listen, you know, we're going to start something small. You need to show her that you're capable of allowing her to make even the smallest decision. Otherwise, she's gone. You need to show this to her. You need to do it right. Otherwise, she's out. Look at how crazy this is. And I laid it out. He goes, you know what, Rabbi, you're right. It's a lot. I have to fix it. You know, I need to work on this. I'm going to work on it. This and that. He goes, so I said, no, it's not enough. You've been telling you're going to work on it your whole marriage. She's telling you now, in or out. Don't tell her when she's going to go. The guy says, Rabbi, you're right. You're right. And he turns to his wife as a sincere chabub guy. And he says, honey, let's agree from right now. Anytime you want to go out on Thursday night, like between 7 and I'm just looking. And I was sure the guy was joking. I thought that's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I was about to, I was like, good one. And then I realized he's being serious. And she's just looking at him. And I said, honey, we're in the room. This is what we're talking about. And the guy says, he goes, I can't, what, any night? Whenever she wants. I was like, yeah, that's how humans work. That are not slaves. He couldn't get his head around it. He says, looking at me, like I'm agreeing with him that she's nuts. He goes, fine. Just go out with your family whenever you want. It's crazy. These nuts around. The guy just could not wrap his head around it because he's a control freak. Yeah. My friends, every person in some way is a control freak. On something, they are a control freak. You have people whose control freakiness manifests, yeah, in controlling other people's time, when they do things, to what level they do things. You have people who try to control other people's religion. You have people who try to control other people's business dealings. You have people who try to control money. The most relaxed person in the world, my father is, except when it comes to money. If I spend something, if I go to the store, it's more than a coffee, I get a message. Do you think I'm made out of money? Guy has every kid, every wife, every kid, every credit card, instantaneous responses. That's a man whose sickness lies in the area of money. Paro could not fathom the idea that he was no longer in control, that he was not setting the expectations. So 50 million people could die, so the country could be destroyed, so that he won't give in on something that he doesn't even care about. Such is the nature of people's desire for control, for power, for ego. So Rabotai, when the stakes are not that high and you're not that perfect, no problem. But when everything's on the table, when your marriage is on the table, when your relationship with your child or your parent is on the table, you're right there, you push them to the red line. They can't handle no more. Your boss, etc. Figure out how to not have something unimportant ruin one of the most important things in your life. Baruch Adonai Le'olam.